This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Let's talk some NBA playoff basketball. Yesterday here on KOL, Utah Jazz fall to the Oklahoma City Thunder 116-108 in game one of the opening round. I still like Utah to win that series. But if I'm a Jazz fan, I'm a little bit concerned. Paul George was fantastic in this contest last night. As far as the Jazz go, Donovan Mitchell, he was Donovan Mitchell, had 27 points in the contest. Ricky Rubio's production left a lot to be desired, though. We're going to talk about that and more, recap the first set of games in round one with James Holas, who is joining us over the phone right now. It's been way too long since we've gotten James on the show with bballbreakdown.com. James, it's good to hear from you.
Thanks for having me on, man. I thought you'd abandoned me for a while. I was like, wow, I'm getting a cold shoulder. Nice to hear from you again, man.
Yeah, it's great to get you back on. Always a spot for James Holas here on the show. James, let's dive right into it by talking some Utah Jazz basketball. Yesterday here on KOL, the Jazz falter in this contest against OKC. Very entertaining game. Jazz get out to a quick start. But at the end of the day, man, there was too much Paul George offensively in this game for OKC. He nets 36 points, and the Thunder get a 116-108 win. Not surprising, at least in my mind, that OKC steals game one. But at the same time, I think this is going to be a long, long series. I think we kind of get a feel of what this series is going to be like in game one.
Well, yeah, it's all, of course, everything the Jazz does is predicated on Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. Those two are the dual straws that stir the Utah drink. And it's been a long time, because I know I haven't been on yet to sing the virtues and extol the excellence of Donovan Mitchell. I absolutely love that kid. I'm gonna tear my rotator cuff a little bit, because before the draft, I actually wrote a piece and I questioned why was Lonzo Ball and not Donovan Mitchell considered, like, you know, one of those top two players in the draft, because I knew from just watching him last year that this kid was special. The thing is, like, Utah is disciplined. They're so disciplined, they're never going to be all the way out of a ball game. And the Thunder are known for letting teams back into ball games because they're so undisciplined. So this will be an interesting dichotomy, an interesting battle there between those two. And, can Paul George go bonkers like that and have 8 3-pointers again? Probably not. You know, will Joe Ingles have another game where he just, in the first half, he can't get it going? Probably not. So, I mean, this is going to be an interesting check and balance and chess match between the coaches.
Going back to what Utah does so well and when things are working right, I don't think it's any coincidence that this team has a problem scoring points. I mean, defensively, they're one of the best in the league. It's, can they score enough points? And if they're giving up 116 on the road, I don't like their chances. With that being said, Ricky Rubio was not very good in this game, James. He wasn't very effective from the field, wasn't very efficient from the field. Shoots just 5 of 18. As far as ball distribution goes, he ends up with 5 assists. Wasn't bad defensively in this game, but we can talk about Mitchell and we can talk about Gobert. To me, it seems when Rubio is right, this team is definitely more potent. There's no question about it.
Absolutely, and I think for a large portion of the ball game, he led Utah, and I think he led all players in shots taken, mm-hmm. and that's playing right into the Thunder's hand. If they try to make Ricky Rubio a scorer, and Ricky Rubio, you know, sure, he's had some really nice stretches this season, especially, you know, shooting the three. He's actually improved a lot. I think he has his career best 3-point percentage this year.
I believe so, yep.
And right, yeah, and he's had some really big games and really nice stretches where he looks like, you know, hey, he's finally figured it out. But we have 6-7 years of Ricky Rubio, and more often than not, you don't want him being your primary scorer. So, yeah, that's something for Utah to definitely work on, is getting the ball, like, for Rubio not to feel like he has to shoot it, and getting the ball in other people's hands, because, you know, he's just not the best option.
Well, that being said, Utah's down 1-0. Jazz fans panicking. How important is game two? Is it a must win? Do you consider it a must win?
It's not a must win. Like Pat Riley used to always say, the series doesn't really start until the home team loses. Mm-hmm. So OKC is supposed to hold serve on their home court. Now the Jazz have to come home and take care of their business too. That's where it becomes important. You don't want to go down 0-3. You don't want to go down 3-1. So it's not must win. And if you start thinking things are must win, that's when you things can cascade and you put an undue pressure on yourself. So you definitely want that split when you're the road team, but it's not must win.
Well, let's flip and talk about a contest in the Eastern Conference, which I think took everyone by surprise. Victor Oladipo was 2017-2018 Victor Oladipo. He finishes with 32 points, and the Pacers blast the Cleveland Cavaliers. You even told me off the cuff this one kind of surprised you a little bit.
This one blew my mind. I think we're so used to the LeBron James playoff experience that it was almost understood, and it's almost universally said, because every year we say the same thing. Hey, the Cavs defense is slipping. LeBron James can't do it anymore, or something to that effect. We all know he's awesome. He's still great. But then the playoffs come around, and he finds another gear, and the team just kind of flips it around. This is his first loss in the first round in like 21 chances, you know? So it's been years since he's lost a game in the first round. And I don't think he's ever been beat like this in the first round. Like, they just got dominated from the jump. Even they got the lead down to single digits. Like, you know, the Pacers never faltered. They just played with pace and aggression, and they just, you know, they stretched that lead back out. We're not used to seeing that from LeBron James and that team. So I was definitely shocked by this outcome. And I feel like Cavs fans who are just saying it's okay, and even LeBron himself saying he's not worried, feels a little bit like whistling past the graveyard, but we'll see.
You know, it doesn't shock me that they lost a game of the first round to Indiana James, because if we go back to the first year that LeBron joined Miami, I don't think there's any debate that this is LeBron's most difficult road to get to the NBA Finals out of the Eastern Conference. And with that, it's going to come some bumps and bruises along the way if he is to get Cleveland back to the NBA Finals. He's never really had to face competition like this in the first, second, or even third round if things play out the way we expect them to play out.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to apologize to Pacers fans, because I guess a big part of my, you know, shock of this is that, yeah, the Pacers were a nice story, and, you know, they're definitely a good team. I think, but people keep saying that, and people can't kind of expect the other shoe to drop with the Pacers. It's hard to believe that the team that we all predicted that Indiana's going to be in the preseason is this good, because no one saw this coming except for maybe everyone in the locker room in Indiana. And even if they told me that, I don't think I'm going to believe it. So it's just so hard to believe, and we keep expecting Indiana to kind of fall apart while they just keep on plugging. And they're young, they're athletic, they play hard. You got to give Nathan Millen a lot of credit.
You also called Victor Oladipo's campaign, and again, I want to point that out because we haven't had you on in a while, but you were not surprised by Oladipo putting up the numbers that he put up this year.
You know what? I can't pat myself on the back and say I was, you know, fully aware that he turns to an all-star. But, I mean, I've always been high on Oladipo's talent. He's kind of a prototypical attacking guard in today's league, where he has size, he had strength, he has athleticism. He just never seemed to put it all together. And I even tweeted this summer after the trade, hey, is this the summer that he gets himself together and it shows on the court? Now, I'd be lying if I said I expected him to average over 20 points a game and lead a team, you know, to the playoffs. But I never really stopped believing in Oladipo. The good kid seems like he's not even a kid anymore. Good young man. He seems to have his head on his shoulders the right way. And, you know, he said it himself. He credits playing with Russell Westbrook. That's how he learned how to take care of his body. He learned how hard he has to go to be that next level type player. And it's amazing to see it all come together. I couldn't be happier for him. And I know that right now LeBron James must be, kind of dreading seeing him on the other side of the floor.
Now, James, I know for the listeners who are unaware, I know you're kind of partial to the Boston Celtics, so I'm sure you were thrilled with the outcome of this game yesterday with Milwaukee. For those who missed it, you missed a crazy contest, including the last 30 seconds of regulation, in which it was just back and forth, back and forth. You're not going to say this, but I know it's one of those games where if you're Milwaukee, you almost hate to see the Bucks come away with a loss in that particular outcome. A loss like that in a playoff contest can be very deflating nonetheless. What are you expecting game two?
I'm expecting that Coach Prunty, is that his name? Coach Prunty's going to come back. And they have to cut down the turnovers. That's the main thing. They have to move Giannis around the floor a little bit, because right now Al Horford did a great job. Even Giannis had 30-something points, I think 34, 35 points. But Al Horford did an outstanding job in keeping him in front of him and limiting his opportunities. They're going to have to find new ways to get him the ball. They're going to run maybe Al Horford off of screens. So put the ball in Giannis's hand and let him run pick and roll up top to try to force switches, because, you know, right now the Celtics have a perfect game plan to deal with him. Sure, he had 34, 35 points, but, you know, when the rubber hit the road, they managed to keep him under wraps. They got to find a way to limit. I mean, the Celtics had like four guys score over 19 points. They got to find a way to limit the perimeter players in Boston.
Again, we're being joined right now by James Holis of bballbreakdown.com. We're going to talk here in just a moment about where you can find more of James's work. James, outside of yesterday's games, and I don't want to slight Houston and Minnesota because that was a very entertaining contest. Jimmy Butler had a chance to force overtime late in that game. What was the most compelling story of the weekend for you?
Most compelling story. I think the Pacers, the way they handled the Cavaliers, that really, to me, stood out more than anything else. I know it sounds shocked, but LeBron James has the pedigree. He's been doing this for the last, you know, he's aiming to go to the finals for 8 straight years. For them to get so thoroughly outplayed, and LeBron James usually has his team ready for the playoffs. That's up there. Maybe the close second was the Sixers, because without Embiid, I thought that the Heat would give them a better fight and, you know, put up a better challenge. And, you know, for part of the game they did. But then the Philly just really poured it on. The shooters got hot, and that kind of shocked me. I kept hearing that Miami would be, you know, they'd be a tougher team in the playoffs than they were in the regular season. But, you know, it is what it is. They're a team without a star.
They gave up 74 points in the second half. That's kind of where I was going. For me, it was Philadelphia, the way they were able to dominate Miami in the second half. Again, they put up, I think, like 35 in the third quarter, scored 40 in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were very, very good offensively in this game. How important is Markelle Fultz to what this team does in the postseason, or is he at all?
Of course he's important. They've been desperately needing another ball handler. So when Simmons goes to the bench or even playing off of Simmons, it just adds another layer to their offense. So the fact that he can come in and manufacture offense out of thin air, and he can run the second units, and he's an underrated passer, that kid is really, I feel great for him, because, you know, people already try to label him a bust. The shoulder issue, the shooting issue, such a strange season for him. Seems like that's already starting to fade into the background, because he's finding a little success. So he's very important, especially if this team's thinking about making a deep run, which, you know, I think is more realistic than it was 2 weeks ago.
Tonight we get Philadelphia and Miami. Start time for that game will be at 6 p.m. Mountain Time of the great San Antonio Golden State on top of that. Speaking of odd seasons, it's been an odd season for San Antonio, to say the least, right? I mean, is this a long series, or is this something that's going to end quick? Is Golden State going to come in and thump this out in 4 to 5 games?
They should thump it out in 4 or 5 games. And like you said, I think that's almost secondary to the saga in San Antonio. Like, I've never seen a situation that's going on with Kawhi Leonard right now. It's such a baffling situation. Any other franchise, I think, it'd lead ESPN every day. If this was Kevin Durant, or if it was Anthony Davis, who was cleared to play months ago and still, for whatever reason, wasn't playing. And you know, the Spurs have earned that kind of goodwill. But it's just, I can't wait for the whole story to come out. And a lot of people are starting to think that maybe Kawhi played his last game in a Spurs uniform.
You know, I'm kind of torn on this, because I remember Derrick Rose receiving a lot of criticism for being cleared to play, coming back from a knee injury, and not playing. It doesn't seem like Kawhi is getting nearly the scrutiny of Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose was an MVP. I get it. He played for the Chicago Bulls. I know it was a different scenario. But at the same time, when you talk about Kawhi Leonard, you're talking about one of the best two-way players in the NBA. And he's been cleared for a while, James, and he isn't playing.
Right, and even the Derrick Rose thing was, you know, they cleared him in the playoffs or right before the playoffs, and he wasn't comfortable coming back, you know. And I think if I'm correct, he was actually kind of proved right, because he got, you know, next year was injured again, and that was part of the downfall of Derrick Rose physically. So that's, you know, even in hindsight, you can kind of say, okay, we can see where Derrick Rose is coming from. In this one, I was listening to Kawhi's interview the other day. He had a media session, and yeah, he said he's been playing 5-on-5, and, you know, he's been cleared since, I think, December, early January. That's just, I get it. It's a chronic condition. Well, you know, I don't get it, and no one gets it. That's what's so baffling about this whole situation.
James, great stuff as always. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work, because I know you're very, very active as far as basketball goes.
Very active on social media. You guys can find me on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin. That's an homage to the great Scottie Pippen. You can find me at bballbreakdown.com. You can find me at realballinsider.com. And I'm also part of the Dunk Tales pod over at Almighty Baller Podcast Network.
And, of course, we'll be able to find you here on Drive Time Sports throughout the rest of the playoffs, right?
I hope so. If you don't take 10 years to call, get me back on again.
That's my fault completely, James, but I do appreciate you being available today.
We all get busy. It's good to hear from you. I'm glad that you're doing well and you're doing okay.
Same for you, man. Same for you. It's always great to get you on the show, James. Thank you again, and hopefully we can catch up next week.
I'm looking forward to it.
Again, that's James Holis. Check out his work online at Snotty Drippin' on Twitter. Love that Twitter handle. Pound for pound, top five Twitter handle of all time. James Holis taking out the time to join us here on Drive Time Sports. We've got a break for just a moment. More coming up when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. You may-